We usually belly on up to the 9-foot homemade oak bar, but since we are recording here in the early morning hours of Friday, March 22nd, I guess we're belly on up to the coffee table, continuing the minor league preview series. Took a little bit of a break due to my scheduling, and then also a trip down to Bradenton for the breakout game, some Pirate City backfield action. But we're back at it and introducing, for the first time on Minor League News and Brews, Bucks in the Basement, the new voice of the Bradenton Marauders. Got a chance to chat with him for a few minutes. I know he was a busy man with all the festivities that were going on. Thomas Zinzarella, by way of Providence. Let's see here. You've been a lot of places, man. The Orleans Firebirds.
Yep.
The Billings Mustangs, the Biloxi Shuckers, the Hudson Valley Renegades. Thomas, how you doing today, brother?
I'm doing well. Yeah, it's been a long journey. New England guy going out to Montana, my first affiliated ball experience. But happy to be here and landing my feet in Bradenton. And this year, I know, getting to experience my first spring training. So that's something I was really looking forward to when I took the job, and definitely happy to be here.
Yeah, and there have been some more changes that have been going on with the Bradenton Marauders. People may not have noticed. There is a new manager, Jonathan Johnston, who had been with the team for the past, I believe, three seasons. Mm-hmm. Still with the organization, but we got a new manager, not new to the organization, in Jim Horner. Also, Scott Siebel, who had been with the Yankees and the Marlins as a hitting instructor, he's in there as well. New integrated baseball performance coach, which is something that Ben Cherington and John Baker have been really big on, bringing in those guys that are not only there to help coach them, but it's also the stuff that goes on outside of baseball. The only thing that's really sticking to them is Matt Ford is back for a second season as pitching coach, but Bradenton's seeing a lot of changes this season.
Yeah, you got a lot of guys that came up from the FCO. That's where Horner was. And so he'd worked with a lot of the coaching staff that's coming in this year. You just kind of see that a lot where, you know, they go from the FCO to then, you know, single A. And obviously it's just down the street from Pirate City. So it's not too far of a trip down the road. I've had a chance to talk to Jim a few times so far. I haven't really met any other the coaching staff yet. I believe we do have something planned maybe next week to, you know, it's the perks of being right here to buy the complex and everything for spring training is that you get to meet a lot of the coaching staff before they get to your affiliate. Usually used to being high A and double A, and we're the ones that are waiting for the players and the coaching staff to get to you, you know, 2-3 days before the season starts, and you get one of those two practices in. But definitely the nice perk is you get to do that, and you get an experienced guy like Jim Horner, who's, you know, coached out in high A before and in the Cali League out there, and former player himself in the minor leagues for a number of years. And he's a West Coast guy, Idaho guy, but he loves it down here in Bradenton.
And you mentioned the FCL, and this is something that we kind of got into when we did get a chance to chat was, you know, the changes that have been made to the FCL season. It's starting about a month earlier, ending about a month earlier, right around the draft time. Previously, some guys would, you know, make their way over to Pirate City, play some backfields games in the FCL. But it's a possibility that you may see more players. And it's not like we haven't seen it before. If you have a college bat, a more advanced bat, they may show up in low A and instead of getting some FCL time. Some of the pitchers that we talked about may not get any time anywhere, depending on what their workload was in college and high school. But it is nice to have, you know, that complex as close as it is to Bradenton.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it'll be interesting to see kind of how that really does work out just around the draft with it starting a month earlier. Will some guys that maybe will extended spring training with the Eagle, playing the complex then, and then go to single A and in Bradenton. So that's the nice part, is that you can shuffle those pieces around. And you haven't worked with the Yankees organization last year. They might have done something similar, like you said, where the arms that didn't pitch after they were drafted, you know, where do they go? I mean, sometimes, you know, just last year, for example, just using it with the Yankees organization, you know, we had a guy, Drew Thorpe, who's been in the news with trades and stuff, and Chase Hampton. Both guys were, you know, Thorpe was a second rounder by the Yankees, and Hampton was, I think, a fourth rounder. And both those guys were drafted, didn't pitch after the draft, and then they were signed to high A. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the Pirates do with you know, how they're going to sign guys with the whole complex shifting, and obviously ending a month earlier too. You know, after the draft, you might just see more guys. Sometimes they get their feet wet, you know, playing in the backfields at Pirate City for three, four, five games, and then, or longer, and then go up, get the call up to single A Bradenton. So it'll be interesting to see the timing of those roster moves too, just through the whole system. Usually, obviously, you get around the trade deadline as well. You're going to see a lot of movement because you're limited with a lot of the roster space now. And so obviously with the draft too, you know, where are they going to go? Are they going to get experience? Especially, it kind of depends what the organization wants to do with guys for every major league team. You know, do they want guys to get some experience right away or not?
Yeah. And like you said, you also mentioned, like, you know, the domestic reserve list has been made smaller and smaller. I always hate to bring up, and hopefully at some point in time I won't bring it up anymore, is, you know, the Bristol Pirates, the advanced rookie ball team going away, the West Virginia Black Bears, short season A ball going away. I kind of saw the writing on the wall that the domestic reserve list would be, you know, made a little bit smaller, might have to make some decisions concerning the rosters a little bit earlier, maybe getting a look at some FCL guys before the draft comes up. I don't want to see anybody go anywhere. Don't want to see anybody, you know, jettisoned off those rosters or off the reserve list. But it's the business, you're doing business. You have to do those kinds of things. But one thing we'll get into a little bit of the preview here, because it kind of seems like a lot of the stuff is happening up in, you see, Indianapolis, Altoona now, when guys, you know, are optioned there because they are already in the major league camps. We're not seeing a ton of the guys. We may have seen some of them in the spring training, the breakout game that will show up in Bradenton. But the one thing this year that's going to be a little bit different is that if you draft somebody like Paul Skeens, you know, they won't show themselves in Bradenton this year. In past years with like a Tamar Johnson, you'll see those, you know, guys that are listed in the Pirates top five and even sometimes the top prospect in Bradenton. But it's not like that it's going to be barren of top prospects. You got Michael Kennedy, who should see some time there possibly. Xander Meath, Zungshuk Shim, Esther Suaro, Yordani De Los Santos, Johnny Severino, Omar Alfonso, and Manuel Torero. So there's still going to be a decent amount of top 30 prospects there in Bradenton that you're going to get to put eyes on, because everybody knows everything starts in Bradenton.
Yeah, no, that's the really cool part about it. It's my first time being in this level. You know, when I was in Billings, it was kind of same level as the Bristol Pirates. It was rookie ball for the Reds out there. And I got out there the year after COVID in 2021. So I was bummed about that, because it would have been around the same type of level where after the draft, you get some guys. But then you also get a lot of the 18, 19-year-old, you know, guys are up and coming. Like I said, like De Los Santos or someone like that, and Xander and those guys, because they're in a different timeline, right, than a guy like Paul Skeens. You know, polished, you know, college pitcher that could rise quickly through the system. So that's kind of the neat part about it, where then last year you get a guy like Tamar Johnson. He's a high schooler. So obviously they're going to, you know, move him progressively, slowly up through the system, get a lot of at-bats, a lot of experience. And, you know, you saw him succeed last year and play really well for Bradenton. So I'm really excited to see, you know, which one of those guys do we see, especially in terms of the arms, because they're always, you know, I feel like most organizations, they like to, you know, they don't want to rush pitchers, especially unless they really think that they're ready. Especially some of these young high school guys or these young, you know, international free signings that they have. So that's kind of the cool part about being at this level is that you get a lot of those guys before, you know, maybe top 30 prospects, but you're going to see their breakout campaigns and them rise, you know, maybe into a top 100 prospect. A little bit different, like Tamar, who was a top 100 guy going in. But an example I guess I can use is, you know, it was at the Brewers double A in Biloxi 2 years ago. And, you know, Johnny Severino's old parent club. But, you know, seeing Jackson Churio, like his rise came from he was 18 years old and, you know, it was a little bit shocking for some people, I think, and around baseball to see him. You know, they Brewers are really confident in his ability, and so they put him in single A Carolina and absolutely mashed there, mashed in high A. And so he turned 19, I think, middle of the season. So, you know, the single A high A seasons end a week before double A. So he played the last six games with us, and he was 19. And then last year he had all the success, and obviously he's right up there with Jackson Holley as one of the top prospects of the game. So for me, just being in that system, like you, for me, now I'm on the other side of it where I get to see those guys, you know, that were these 18, 19 year old, you know, guys that were, you know, that were, it's not saying like they're not known or anything like that, but they become very known around, they may be known around the Pittsburgh ranks and, you know, fans and stuff, but then they get to be known around all of Major League Baseball.
Yeah. And with like the national media, it is something that, you know, there's guys that jump onto the radar, they do different types of things. And for me, I mean, I look at the amount of, you know, we talk about like, you know, the catching depth and different types of stuff. I mean, obviously with Andy Rodriguez's injury, you have Henry Davis up there, and people were saying that, you know, the ranks of the Pirates, you know, that depth may be going away a little bit. But I mean, you have, you know, Axel Plaz, you have Omar Alfonso, you have Miguel Sosa, who can catch and then also bounces to the outfield. So I feel like some of that stuff that gets lost in the shuffle when a guy gets signed, you know, during that international signing period, we're starting to see a lot of those guys kind of move up through the ranks. And we did get to see, you know, those guys, you know, work out some of their kinks. I think Omar, the bad part was, is I think he was trying to catch for either Ashcraft or Bubba Chandler out there and didn't have the headset going. So they had to go back to the old fashioned symbols, and he was a little bit of confusion, but yeah, some very interesting catching prospects down in Bradenton this year.
Yeah. I mean, that's the great part about it too, is that, you know, you get these international signings or someone like that, and they can make themselves into prospects. You know, I don't want to keep talking about other organizations, but the Yankees were like that last year where they just had an embarrassment of riches, but there were a lot of guys or two, three, four guys that made themselves into prospects. And so I think you can see the same thing in, you know, any position in the Pirates organization. Obviously have a lot of infielders right now, you know, guys competing for the major league job at second base, and you know, catching, I think, is another one of those where they have options, but you can really fill the system with these guys. And again, it's the same thing where they can have their breakout campaign here to really solidify and prove to, you know, the organization that, you know, they're a guy to be reckoned with. And so I think that's always an important part to always remember.
Yeah, and I don't want to put you on the spot here because you are fairly new to the job and everything, but I mean, I always ask the broadcasters, you minor league guys, if there is, you know, maybe one hitting prospect that has maybe caught your eye so far, one pitching prospect that you've maybe got to see that is the kind of standing out to you at the moment.
You know, just from, because I've seen basically every home of spring training game, so you get some guys in there. But I know even the breakout game, you know, Lonnie White Jr. I think is always a guy that can really break out, just, you know, just him staying on the field. And so I'm hopefully excited to see him and maybe in Bradenton this year if he does end up there or not. And I think Shim as well on the pitching side, I haven't seen him, but just from reading on some of the stuff, and obviously he's 19. So he's a guy that's, you know, maybe FCL and then Bradenton or just Bradenton to start the season. Xander kind of the same way, young high school arm. I don't know if he's going to start again. It's a lot of these options. That's why I'm like, I'm really looking forward to getting the roster because you'll see who we start with and obviously, okay, go from there. And Maybe they'll keep guys in extended spring, but you know, I think those are a couple guys. Sungjae Chang, I've always been impressed with him. I saw him in Greensboro last year to open up the season. It was right after the World Baseball Classic, and seeing him, but I don't remember him having this much power. And so to see him hit a couple home runs in spring training, not easy ones either, against some really good arms. I was like really impressed with him even more. That's just someone from, you know, the other spring training games that, you know, I've seen him a lot in play. So definitely I'm looking forward to kind of, again, seeing this, who's going to be on this Bradenton roster. And you know, I think it's different even for me. I'm trying to figure out myself, you know, obviously first year, it's a little bit tough trying to figure out who's going to be here. You're looking at, you know, who ended the season here, you know, guys after they drafted, you know, are the guys like Mitch Jebb or, you know, Garrett Forrester, like, are they going to be here? Or are they going to start the year in Greensboro? So it's a lot of question marks. And I'm just, you know, love to see both those guys play too. So I've heard some looking at some stuff from Jeb and those guys last year. It'd be great to have them.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be tough with some of the players. I know that, you know, Owen Kellington was in Bradenton for a while last year. You never know what Ben Cherington and John Baker are going to do. Sometimes they like to give those guys a little bit of that runway to take off to get some success at the lower levels, but then they other times are, you know, very advanced with their placements. So with the guys, you know, that's why Greensboro and Bradenton I probably start a week later, is because, you know, you're going to have to make some of those tough decisions. Guys, you know, that played in the FCL last year, are you going to start them, you know, in the FCL depending on how much time they had? I mean, I did get to see a friend of the podcast, Eric Birdland, Eric Garfield, does a lot of the stuff with the Orioles, but he did have a little bit of a bullpen action and a little bit of game time with Xander Meath, which is a guy who I am super excited about. And I'm hoping that he's in Bradenton so that I can be able to see him on my MILB TV. But that's the things with these lower levels is definitely the placements. And you have in some ways, you know, three places to choose from, but in those, you see like a Tony Blanco Jr. Is he going to be up in Bradenton? A lot of different guys, because even your Dorney De Los Santos showed early on that he was maybe a little bit too big for the FCL last year, but then, you know, kind of struggled when he came up to Bradenton. So that's the thing, like these lower levels, man, it gets very tough as to see, you know, exactly where the placement's going to be.
Yeah, and I think too, like a guy like De Los Santos, just from I think looking at his numbers and a little bit, like it's a guy like that. You see a lot of organizations like that where, you know, they challenge him late in the season and, you know, play 20 games or so or whatever he did in single A. And then that's kind of, you know, that kind of helps me, someone like us, decide, okay, like, are they going to be, probably will start the year in single A and see if they can build that success then and meet that challenge. And that's the thing too. It's like, you know, go back and forth. It's like you realize, like, well, they're only, you know, it could be 18, 19, 20 years old, some of these international guys. And so, or even 21 and 22. And you forget that, like, they could be 21 in single A, but it's still almost on the young side because anybody coming out of the draft would probably be about the same age. And so if they start the year age 21 in single A, like, they might be able to progress to high A and double A, just depending on, you know, how well they play during the season. So that's why I always say, like, this level's been really interesting because, you know, some of the pitching, you know, you're going to have some of those younger arms here or guys that were, you know, 22 year olds. And so you might see pitching. I've always said, I think pitching is always dominated in a way, single A and high A. So that's where you could see some arms. And that's why I'm very intrigued to see, you know, 19 year old guy like Shim, if he does, you know, at any point pitch here in Bradenton, you know, cause again, usually I feel like pitching always does kind of dominate these lower levels.
Yeah. And the other part is that, you know, when the Pirates drafted guys last year, they had some starting pitchers who they used in kind of like relief roles. They did draft a ton of college arms last year. And a player like that sticks out to me is like a Christian Curtis. Mm-hmm. A lot of people didn't know kind of who he was. Obviously at the breakout game, I made a little bit of a name for himself there. But is, you know, could he possibly be in Bradenton to get stretched out and not thrown into And I mean, I'm going to be covering and previewing Greensboro next week. And I hate to always bring it up, but the size of the ballpark, do you really want to throw, you know, a guy in his first professional, you know, throw him into the rotation when a lot of the times a fly ball there, it turns into a home run and can be, you know, fairly intimidating for pitchers. And on the opposite end, you know, do you want to give a hitter a little bit of that runway instead of, like, you know, everybody likes the long ball, and do you change your swing a little bit to get a little bit more power in Greensboro? So who knows with that kind of stuff, but, you know, Christian Curtis, that was very impressive at that spring training, the breakout game.
Yeah. And he was a guy that was not a late addition to the roster, but, you know, he wasn't originally on it. Then, you know, Harrington comes off and so they put him on, I think, you know, 2 days before it was going to happen. And I didn't, you know, hadn't looked at trying to build this roster or what it's going to look like or anything yet. And so kind of looking at his name and seeing him pitch and, you know, just impressed with him. And, you know, there are a couple other college guys too. I think, I know, like you said, that were in the relief, I think, I don't know if it was Strickland. I don't know if he was a college guy or Furtado. I think they were college guys. I can't remember who like pitched in the FCL and who didn't, because you get a lot of that sometimes. Or they're drafted college guys, but some of them do and don't pitch. But no, and that's what I said. Like you know, they'll go against some other similar age hitters. But you know, you get an SEC caliber pitcher, maybe 10th round pick or something like that, and you know, them going against you know, 20-year-old. You know, high school kid that was drafted. It kind of makes for some interesting a battle as well at this level.
Yeah, and the one thing when we first jumped on here, I was talking about, like, you know, the path that you've taken, and I want to give you kind of that opportunity just of, like, you know, graduating in 2021, and you look at all the places that you've already moved and different stuff. So, I mean, just take us behind the scenes a little bit of a minor league announcer. I've gotten to know some of the guys. I definitely, you know, talked to you about, you know, having a friend who was in the Yankees system, started out in the Pirates system as an announcer, but it's just not the broadcasting that you're in charge of down there in Bradenton. And it's definitely been a, like you said, moving all over the place. So what is it like as a minor league broadcaster?
Yeah, it's definitely a grind. I do a lot of the media relations work as well, wherever I've been. So, you know, grew up in Connecticut. So that's why I work in Four Orleans and the Cape League. You know, growing up, that was my local backyard league. And it was, you know, I think growing up, you never realized how good it was at the time. And, you know, 1 in 7 major leaguers have played on the Cape. Like growing up, I remember used to the baseball clinics up there. And so Matt Wieters was my clinic coach one time. I was a catcher, a left-handed hitter too. And so getting to, you know, I was like 7 years old maybe. And I was like, I want to, you know, I'm a catcher and going to work with a guy like Matt Wieters, who goes, you know, top five in the draft by the Orioles and wins a couple gold gloves, all-star. It's pretty cool to have that in your back pocket. Even too, then when, you know, I realized I want to work in baseball, you know, to have that in my backyard, I'm like, you know, my grandparents had a house there growing up. And so, you know, always been around a league and got to intern there for a few summers. And that's where I met Jack McMullen up in Indianapolis now. And Jack and I weren't the same team, but we got to meet on the Cape and that summer. And I remember, you know, I was there in 2018 and 2019, and, you know, COVID kind of cut short my 2020, but I remember seeing Nick Gonzalez up there play and for Katuit. And I was really impressed with Nick. I mean, there were a couple of guys that I've seen up there. I'm like, this guy is just, he's different. And so to see him go in the first round, and obviously his son had some major league time and he's up there, you know, I got to see guys like Spencer Torkelson, Alec Manoa, just coming off the top of my head right now of guys that I remember seeing. And, you know, Michael Bush, I remember, you know, he played on the same team with Torkelson on the Cape. And I'm like, I thought they had the most stacked roster. And there's another guy too, Blake Sable, who's been around a couple major league teams now. He's with the Giants on opening day last year. So, you know, to think of my first job in college where there weren't many job openings because of COVID in 2021. And so I was lucky to work for Billings Mustangs in the Pioneer League, which is, you know, old rookie ball league that lost its affiliation. Definitely was a different travel type of league. And that's the one thing that Joe Block and I have the same, we work for the same GM for the same team in Billings. So Joe, before I think he got his start with the Brewers, then I know he was there for 2 years or so. And so that was kind of a nice little connection that we have together. And then I've been seasonal ever since, since college. So, do baseball season, then I go back to Massachusetts, do some college games up over there, basketball, hockey. I do a lot of, and then off to baseball. Then, the next year is the number two guy and for the Brewers, double A in Biloxi, and then up to the Yankees high at Philly last year as a number two guy. So it's definitely a lot of experiences you learn and you pick up a lot. I remember before I got my first job, one of my broadcasting mentors, who's a minor league guy, kind of told me, he said, you think you know a lot about baseball, having played it, growing up and everything, into high school. But he's like, the amount of stuff you'll learn your first couple seasons, like it's a lot. And I was like, he's even like, he's been in there for a long time. He's like, I'm still even learning stuff. And I've been in for 20 years or so. And so this is year four for me. And I think there's every year there's new stuff that I learn and pick up. But going back to the question too, well, kind of what goes on with my job? Well, it's again, a lot of media relations work and that usually have a partner. So I'm a one man band here pretty much. My assistant GM, she handles a lot of the media relations stuff too. So I do have a lot of help here. So I get to really prioritize broadcasting and kind of what goes along with that, pregame show, pregame interviews and getting ready for the whole broadcast.
Yeah. Well, Thomas, we're glad to have you in the Pirates organization. Looking forward to watching some of the games on MILB TV. I've subscribed to that ever since I can remember now. And like I said, for a good Marauder season, everything starts in Bradenton. We're definitely going to have to bring you back on once you've kind of hit the ground running a little bit more as we get into the season. For anybody that doesn't, please go give Thomas a follow. It's at Zins21. Follow at _Marauders. Thomas, definitely going to have you back on here, brother. And it was great to meet you. And thanks for hopping on.
No, thank you for having me. Definitely looking forward to Marauders. Hopefully championship season.
Oh, absolutely. As I said before, I am drinking the coffee. I am not drinking the beer right now. It is way too early in the morning for that. But when I was down in Bradenton at the ballpark, everybody goes out to the boardwalk, and I do that myself as well. But as you go in the front doors, hang a left there, you can get some Cigar City beers. I've reviewed some of these on the show. But the ones that I had down there when I was down there for spring training for the breakout that I hadn't had previously, the one I know, I'm just going to say it first because I'm going to butcher this name terribly, and I apologize to Cigar City. It's Gurabera, the Citra Pale Ale, coming in at 5.5%. Give that one a 425 on the weighted based on batting average scale. Bring that down to 375. Fancy Papers Hazy IPA coming in at 6.5%. Give that one a 450. I really like this one. It was a little bit higher in the ABV, but was very smooth drinking. So that's a 450, knock it down to 400. And whenever you leave the ballpark, I did go further down to go to Motorworks Brewing, but if not, you can just hop right across the street to Magnanimous Brewing. I got a couple beers there to take back to the Airbnb. The first one, if anybody is an old school wrestling fan and remembers NWO and their symbol, this one is the HWO, the Haze World Order, double dry hop, double IPA. 8.5%. And anybody who knows me knows that I can only have about one of these now. I'm getting up there in age. Definitely a very delicious beer, 8.5%. Give this one a 400, knock it down to 350. And then the Ride the Haze craze. Must have some Metallica fans in there, because this was like the Ride the Lightning on the can. A very cool can. I'll have to share the picture that I took of that can. It's a Citra IPA coming in at 7%. Once again, a little bit heavier for me, but this one had a great taste. Was probably one of the best beers I had when I was down there. Give that one a 475. Knock it down to 425. As I said earlier, going to be doing the Greensboro Grasshoppers as the last part of the preview series before the season starts next week. But until then, guys, let's go Indians. Let's go Curve. Let's go Hoppers. And let's go Bradenton Marauders.